Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
From the Van Trump Conference in Kansas City, Missouri, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. A bit later in the program, Joe Outlaw will be here. He's from Texas A&M. He has a really unique view on farm policy and farm bill and how that might make its way, or maybe not, through Congress in the coming year. And we'll also talk with the folks at FBN. That's the Farm Business Network. Oh, and Drew Lerner will be here, too, from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Because I'm here, no update of the commodity markets, no numbers that were trading in Chicago today, though. When we talk with Matt, soybeans were down substantially. Stay with us, if you can, though, right here on the Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Our term for the day is speculate. Speculation is the practice of engaging in risky financial transactions in an attempt to profit from short or medium-term fluctuations in the market value of a tradable good, rather than attempting to profit from the underlying attributes embodied in the instrument. Many speculators pay little attention to the fundamental value of a security or a commodity and instead focus purely on price movements. Speculation can, in principle, involve any tradable good or financial instrument. Speculators are particularly common in the market for stocks, bonds, commodity futures, currencies, fine art, collectibles, real estate, and derivatives. Speculators play one of four primary roles in financial markets, along with hedgers who engage in transactions to offset some other pre-existing risk, arbitrageurs who seek to profit from situations where fungible instruments trade at different prices in different market segments, and investors who seek profit through long-term ownership of instruments' underlying attributes. The role of speculators is to absorb excess risk that other participants do not want, and to provide liquidity in the marketplace by buying or selling when no participants from other categories are available. Successful speculation entails collecting an adequate level of monetary compensation in return for providing immediate liquidity and assuming additional risk so that, over time, the inevitable losses are offset by larger profits. And that's the definition of speculation. Let me take a moment now to thank you for listening to our ag programming. Thank you. I mean it. Really, thank you for listening to the programming. And just as a reminder, here's what you hear each and every business day. We start at 8:55 a.m. with the opening market report, including Aaron Curtis, Pete Manhart, Bill Gentry, Ellen Dearden, and Bill Mayer. And then an update at 10:58 a.m. with five other voices, Joe Vaklovic, Greg Ginder, Merrill Crowley, Chip Nellinger, and Steve Georgie, followed up at 12:58 each and every business day with Sue Martin, and then, of course, the closing market report, including our analysts Kurt Kimmel, Wayne Nelson, Jackie Vakes, Dan Zwicker, and Mike Zuzalo. And we wrap up each week by recording Commodity Week on Thursday evening. You can hear it at willag.org that night or on Friday afternoon at 2:36. Oh, and don't forget that we also have a whole series of regularly scheduled analysts during the closing market report for weather. Those include meteorologist on Monday, Mark Russo, Tuesday, Don Day, Wednesday, Drew Lerner, Thursday, Mike Tenora, and on Friday afternoon, both Jim Angel and Eric Snodgrass. WillAg.org. We think it's one of the most comprehensive places that you can find information about markets and weather and agricultural news. Oh, and thank you. Thank you so much for listening. This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. We're at the Van Trump Conference in Kansas City, Missouri. It's like, well, Illinois just moved here. You and I are here. I saw Bruce Sherrick and Mr. Kappas from the College of Aces and a whole bunch of other folks that we talk to from time to time. Matt Bennett is with us. He's from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. You've been traveling a lot, talking with farmers at the beginning of this winter meeting season. What have you learned and what have you been telling them?
You know, the interesting thing for a lot of producers is, a lot of producers had really good corn yields this past year, but I've yet to find too many of them that actually made more money on corn than soybeans. It's definitely been something that the Farm Doc people have highlighted the last couple, 3 years, but I'm hearing in a lot more places other than right there at home. And so, you know, producers are trying to ask themselves the question, you know, do I dare say beans on beans? You know, what do I do here? Especially whenever we saw November beans, you know, earlier today, 10-20. I mean, you know, there's a lot of folks getting really close to $10 out of the field. And if they're delivering to the terminal, absolutely, they could lock that in. And so definitely there's a lot going on, but there's a lot of discussion on soybean profit margins versus corn profit margins.
So we're recording earlier in the day again today, just because I can't really do the program live. Great day yesterday for soybeans, not so good today.
Yeah, we started out, you know, resuming the uptrend, and then we kind of turned things around. Forecast change for Argentina, putting a little bit more rain in the forecast, you know, and then all of a sudden the bean market turns around. And that's something we've been talking to our clients about. Yeah, there's still upside potential in this bean market at any point in time. You know that as well as I do. We've seen rallies come out of the middle of nowhere. However, whenever you do get that kind of value on the table, profit margins on the table, it's very smart to go ahead and lock some in, because as we know, the bean market can vanish just as quickly as it showed up.
So we have a weather market, but it's for soybeans, and we have a South American crop, so every 6 months we're trading a weather market potentially, so we got a lot of time left for that crop. They will start some harvest January, certainly in February, but they're mostly in that late May, early June time frame at this point down there. For the corn market, however, the United States is still the primary. It is the driver across the planet. And there's just a lot of corn here in the U.S.
Yeah, there is. You know, when you looked at the USDA numbers in November, we're actually going to ratchet down the world carry from the beginning of the 16-17 marketing year to the end of the 17-18 marketing year by about 10 million metric ton. And so, you know, that's a fairly friendly thing. But the bottom line is, if our exports don't start to pick up, we're going to be looking at upwards of a 2.5 billion bushel carry out in the U.S. And as you say, with the U.S. being the king driver here, there's no reason why a person can get super friendly to the corn market. Now, with that being said, you know, there's a lot of folks that feel like we may have some inflation creep in. We may be able to get this corn market going. But if we take the soybean market lower, it's going to be really tough to rally this corn market, because to date, the corn market has struggled to rally even in the face of soybean strength. And I think if you see soybean weakness, I'm afraid that you could see a fair amount of corn weakness too.
I often hear brokers talk about selling either one or the other of the crops, especially for cash needs. But marketing is marketing, and it's not usually one or the other. It could be both, I would think.
Right. Now, so I think maybe the more important thing in a year like this is, how much are we going to wrap up in commercial storage? You know, there is a ton of corn out there. So if I had corn on the farm and I had corn in commercial storage, or beans, either one, you know, I don't really want to get too carried away with how much I'm spending on the commercial storage. I do think the carry in the market has suggested, hey, we're going to go ahead and pay you to go ahead and store this thing. But the carry is ate up by commercial storage. So I certainly want to be moving out of those bushels, whether it's corn or beans. And then if you want to re-own, especially on corn, gee whiz, the strategies to get you out into the summertime frame, even September strategies, are cheap as dirt. At the money call spreads, 10, 12 cents. That's probably something we need to be looking at pretty closely.
So how do you go about doing it? Give me one of the strategies that you think works fairly well.
Yeah, so a lot of folks are sitting on a bunch of bushels in the commercial storage. Go ahead and move out of those. If you want to stay in it, buy yourself a call spread where you're buying an at-the-money call, maybe a 380 SEP call, selling a 430, 440, depending on your preference. You can do that, again, for maybe 12, 13 cents or less, especially if it's a 50-cent window. Now, granted, that's going to quantify quantify the maximum amount you can make out of a rally, but you and I both know if we get a 30, 40 cent rally, that's probably going to be a really good win for most of us on the farm. And so maybe I need to take advantage of something like this because it actually cheapens it up, even though I'm giving a little bit of the potential reward away.
Next week, USDA will release the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates. Will you mostly be watching the export numbers for both corn and soybeans and ethanol in particular?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the ethanol numbers, actually this morning, all-time record. We burned through 115 million bushels of corn in ethanol usage, by far and away the biggest we've ever seen. But yes, next week we have to keep an eye. In November, they ratcheted up corn exports 75 million bushels. That was a head-scratcher then. Boy, it even seems more of a head-scratcher now. The only way that's going to come to fruition is if the Brazilians plant quite a bit less corn, which I do think is going to happen, and have a weather issue. If those two things happen, maybe later in the year we catch up. You know, it's a possibility, but yes, we're going to have to watch those very closely on the report.
Grain stocks report will not come out until January, but collected, of course, as of December 1st. Does that number scare you in any potential way as it relates to how much has been used by the livestock industry in the United States?
Well, I think that there's a couple of things as far as a disappearance that could be actually working in our favor. When you have 10% more cattle on feed than 1 year ago, that's a very, very friendly factor, first of all. Second of all, we are boiling through the corn for ethanol. And so, you know, that might actually be what I would say is an anomaly as far as USDA reports go, and that we might see a friendly one for a change. I don't know that it's going to be wildly bullish, but I think that it could be supportive, if nothing else.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you, Todd.
And of course, is Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting Channel Seas and is with me here at the Van Trump Conference in Kansas City. One of the things that Kevin likes to do is to bring in technology companies, I think in large part so he can think about whether it's a good investment. But the other part of it is just to see what's out there and what's changing and how it might impact agriculture. Charles Barron is here. He's with FBN, the Farmers Business Network. He's a co-founder of this, shall I call it a startup?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were created 3 years ago, started with three farms in Illinois, up in the Davenport area, the Quad Cities area. And what FBN is, it's a farmer-to-farmer network. And by connecting farms together, connecting farms digitally using precision data, we can provide a level of transparency and independent information about things like seed performance, seed prices, chemical prices, and then actually the ability to purchase those products online at massive savings in a way that's completely independent and it's all farmer driven. And so in that last 3 years, because of those roots and because of our mission, we've grown from those three farms to over 5,000 farms around the United States, now representing about 17 million acres of farmland. And that creates a level of information around seed performance that's simply never been available.
So let me ask a couple of quick questions to get a comparison. So many of the listeners will be familiar with FBFM, the Farm Business Farm Management Record Keeping System. There are FBFMs in Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, Indiana. They collect all kinds of data from producers, handwritten in mm-hmm. all of the time. You do more than that. And while you can benchmark off of FBFM how you're doing against others in FBFM, you're doing something similar with the 5,000 farms, I think, but it's a little different.
Well, it's completely different. So, you know, FBFM is really doing financial benchmarking. And what FBN's doing is actually giving you field-by-field agronomic analysis and input cost analysis, product-by-product, molecule-by-molecule, seed-by-seed. So what does that mean in practice? Well, say you're a grower in Champaign area, and you're in central Illinois, and you're on Drummer Flanagan soil or Drummer soil. Well, we have hundreds of thousands of acres of farms running Drummer soil, and what we're doing is by being part of the network, it's a learning network, we're able to find the highest yielding seeds on Drummer soil. And we found over the last 2 years of doing this across multiple growing seasons, the yield gains from picking those seeds that are actually highest performing from the network on those soil types was average of 6 bushels an acre, and it jumped to 25 bushels an acre when you got really dense data networks like we do in central Illinois. So it's phenomenally valuable for growers to be able to learn from the thousands of other growers participating and sharing in FBN because they're simply higher yields and lower costs. Now, there's a couple other things you can do with that level of transparency. One problem that's been commonly known but poorly understood is an issue of genetic licensing and seed. So which seeds are actually the same as other seeds sold by other companies? Well, we studied this. Our farm sent about 9,000 seed tags in, and we found that 40% of the corn seeds and 47% of the bean seeds were genetically matches. They had the same variety ID, the same genetic trait package. Not all identical to each other, but that they were identical to other seeds being sold on the market by their companies, sometimes for wildly different prices. There could be a $100 a bag difference in corn. There could be a $20 a bag difference in soybeans between the same genetics being sold by two different companies. And I'm not talking about the same trait or similar parental lines. I'm talking about the matching variety ID and trait package. And so what we did is we built a system where a farm can automatically identify which seeds are the same as others, which other companies sell those seeds, if those seeds are available for less money, and to see the full market price transparency so farms can share their input price records. We've analyzed 50,000 chemical and seed invoices here in the last year, and that gives growers the ability to really understand what actual prices are and are traits paying, and are these seeds worth the added investment.
How did farmers get involved with FBFM, should they like, and who does the data belong to?
So FBN is a membership. It's a farmer-driven organization. It's $600 a year membership fee. There's no acreage fees. The way it works is it's your data, so you can delete your data in FBN. FBN does an anonymized, aggregated copy of the data, but it's not a personal copy of the data. So we analyze that data, and what that aggregate data allows you to do is really get the deep value out of data. And so when you look at data and you think about data and you think about what's the value of it, it's historically been thought of, well, how's this going to help me make a prescription? Or how's this going to help me change my fertilizer application? The way you should think about it is, how's it going to help you transform the whole way you do purchasing? How's it going to help you market your crop differently? We can actually help growers market their crops based on the precision data from their field. So we have food companies come to us wanting spec crop, and we can identify our growers who are growing that crop, that whether that's a particular seed or whatnot, and then bring them contracts. And so data can change your farm in so many ways. It has really, really transformative benefits. And then we actually have full e-commerce. So you can come online, you can buy inputs through FBN, and we've had our farms commonly save anywhere from 10 to as much as 40%, sometimes even more, on things like chemical and fertilizer buying online. So that's the whole model of FBN. So if you use your data in the right way, it can be phenomenally valuable to the farm. Not talking a couple dollars an acre, many tens of dollars an acre, very commonly.
How much time should a producer allot for input of the data? In a month, in a year, in a week?
Very little. Data, you shouldn't have to be thinking about data. Data should not, no one gets up in the morning wanting to just process and handle ag data. We do, but you shouldn't. What we've tried to do is make it as easy as possible. So people who are on cloud systems like the John Deere cloud system, their API, it just streams automatically. You don't have to do any work. If you use other technologies like precision planting or the Ag Leader systems, it's very, very, very easy to transfer. So it takes almost no work. You just have to do it. And when you do it, each time you add data, you unlock more information about your farm. You get field level benchmarking. You get price transparency on seeds. You get relabeling intelligence on seeds. You get price transparency on chemicals. Your data can really give you information that exists in no other form. And it shouldn't be a pain at all to do. So, for example, if you want price intelligence on seed and chem, you just send a picture of an invoice. And when you send a picture of an invoice via email, we do all the data entry work for you. So we make it as painless as possible, because data is not what's important. Getting the ROI and making the decision that's going to make you the money is what matters.
Charles, thanks so much.
Great to be with you, Todd.
Charles Barron is with FBFM. That's the farm. Charles Barron is with FBN, that's the Farm Business Network. Hey, there are just a couple of more days to sign up for the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. If you have not done that yet, you can go to the Farm Doc Daily website. That's farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Sign up today. In fact, if you do that, got to do it by the 11th. The cost is just $65. If you want to phone in, it's $70. And if you don't, get yourself pre-registered by the 11th. It'll cost you $75. The Ag Economist and I will be out on the road at five different sites across the state of Illinois. Coming up on the 18th of this month, and we'll be out all week. That's a Monday. We'll, of course, be in Springfield and DeKalb, Peoria. We'll be not in Mount Vernon this year, but down in Carlisle, and, of course, right here in Champaign. I'm not in Champaign today, but we'll be at the iHotel in Champaign. Get yourself signed up. Again, Gary Schnitke will be there. Bruce Sherrick will be on the road with us. Todd Hubbs, Scott Irwin, a whole bunch of other folks that you want to hear and talk with, and your chance to ask them questions. The Illinois Farm Economics Summits, we take a look at what's happened in agriculture in the state in the last year and do some soothsaying about what might be coming up in this year. Sign up on the Farm Doc Daily website. That's farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Don't wait. Do it right now. You've got to do it by the 11th, or you'll be able to walk in at one of those sites. Well, the panel that I'm hosting this afternoon, in fact, just about finishing up as this airs, is about a couple of different things, land values and farm policy. One of the panelists is Joe Outlaw. He's from Texas A&M and a policy specialist there. Joe joins us now to talk a little bit about his view of the farm policy debate. You've got an interesting take on what might happen in Washington, D.C. Can you tell me what your thoughts are?
Sure. What I was saying was that we're all working on the farm bill. I know that the congressional staff are working real hard on putting a new one together. But there is at least a small chance that if, say, dairy and cotton get handled before the end of the year in a spending bill, that the pressure for a new farm bill would really be alleviated, and you'd pretty much just they could extend the current bill, which by and large to make the bill better, you have to have more money or take money from some other area of the bill. So if that's going to be very, very hard to do once you start, where all the money is at is where the food programs are at. If you take the money out of those food programs, you're going to lose the Democratic support for the bill. So one of the thoughts that people have is, if we can get some of the dairy and cotton fixed, just extend the current bill longer term. Not a short-term extension, but a longer term.
So how do they fix that in the spending bill? Because they would have to somehow make cotton and oilseed in order for it to be eligible for ARC and PLC.
Actually, the previous spending bill in the Senate actually did that already. So the groundwork has been laid. The question is, does a new spending bill that will be done sometime in the next couple of months have that in it?
So it's just a matter of funding it.
Right. And if that happens, it's funded outside the farm bill, and it takes a lot of pressure off on other spending.
That's an interesting thought. Any other things that we ought to know about from your side as you view farm policy in Washington, D.C. for the coming year?
Well, I guess I talk all over the country on this stuff, and my thought is that policy is policy, and they're going to have a safety net. But some of the other things, like the tax provisions, whether we withdraw from NAFTA, there are other issues that are going to be more impactful on agriculture than the farm bill. We need a good safety net, but the bill's just one of the things that's going to happen.
Your view almost sounds too easy, just to extend the current farm bill as long as you can get dairy and cotton taken care of in the spending bills or in the appropriations.
Well, basically, you would, at that point, I'd have a hard time finding too many groups that have a big issue that needed to be solved.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Sure. Anytime.
Joe Outlaw is with Texas A&M, joins us here at the Van Trump Conference in Kansas City.
It's Feast of Nicholas Day, patron of bakers, barrel makers, brewers, and coopers. On this day in agricultural history in 1492, Columbus sighted the island, now known as Haiti and the Dominican Republic. In 1766, Johann Bodmer was born, a Swiss mechanic. He was a prolific inventor of textile-making machinery, including machines that made the process from carding to spinning wool continuous. In 1863, Charles Hull was born, a U.S. chemist. He invented an inexpensive process for extracting aluminum from its ore using carbon electrodes with homemade batteries and sodium aluminum fluoride. Before that discovery, aluminum was considered a precious metal like gold or silver. Afterwards, it went for 18 cents a pound. In 1945, the microwave oven was patented. And in 2006, an outbreak of illness from the dangerous E. coli 0157H7 was reported, with green onions as the suspected cause. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here now. He's from World Weather in Kansas City, right where I am. Hey, it's a beautiful day here. Thanks for being with us, Drew.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful day. Let's hope it stays this way for a while.
I hope so. I need to drive home yet this evening, so we're hoping for that. Let's turn our attention directly to South America, Argentina in particular. It appears things are changing there. At least that's what the commodity markets have been telling us this morning. What do you see?
Well, it certainly looks as though there's going to be a restricted amount of precipitation coming up over this next 7 to 10 days. The lack of precipitation will be accompanied by a ridge of high pressure that will generate some warmth as well. Temperatures will get up into the middle 80s through the 90s across a big part of the country. And we'll probably see some extremes over 100 degrees in the northwestern parts of the production region, although those areas are probably less important for the total corn and soybean crop than certainly the heart of Argentina is. And those areas in central Argentina are actually in better moisture shape right now than northern Argentina is. There have been at least some shower and thunderstorm activity here over the past week, and so the soil's in relatively good shape ahead of this dry and warm period in those central areas. But about 10 days from now, we'll be looking for a fairly decent drink of water, and we may get at least some moisture at that point in time. I am not convinced that we're going to just break out of this dry, warm pattern and get a good soaking, but we ought to get at least a little shower activity and a temporary bout of relief.
So that's what the marketplace has been reacting to, though you don't really sound convinced, and you've said that's the case. What are you watching that tells you one way or the other if it will or will not rain?
Well, we're watching real closely the upper air flow pattern, and we're seeing a lot of conflicting opinions in the various models out there. Certainly the European model has a very strong bias towards making it dry for a second week, and also warm weather occurring. The Canadian model seems to be following fairly closely, but then we've got the American model, which is a little bit wetter. I will say, though, that the American model has corrected itself a little bit here at midday today, backing off on some of the rainfall. So we're going to be watching all these systems over the next several days, and I'm pretty convinced that we are going to see drier and warmer bias conditions for a while. The question is how sustainable will it be? And I think we're probably going to see it around for a while.
Does this also give you worries for the crop in Paraguay and in southern Brazil?
Certainly those areas in southern Brazil will be drying down as well. The difference between the southern Brazil crops and those in Argentina is that the ridge of high pressure will spend much less time in those areas, and so the temperature bias will not be as high relative to normal as it will be in Argentina. Also, subsoil moisture in southern Brazil is in much better shape than it is in northern Argentina right now. So, again, I think we'll be in better shape in southern Brazil for a longer period of time. But with that said, we are still going to dry them down as well.
Anything that we need to be concerned about in the western Great Plains states as it relates to cattle and livestock?
Certainly, there's a lot of worry about the lack of moisture out there. You know, this is a wheat crop. We try to kill it many times over the course of the winter, and it's just a really tough crop, and I think it's a little premature to try to write off some of that crop right now. Most of it has a root system. Most of it has gone dormant or semi-dormant at this point, and so there isn't much precipitation in the pipeline, but I think if we can get some moisture in the late weeks of winter or early spring, we should have this crop in a position where it can snap around and get much better once again.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.